Packers with the dagger drawn. Aaron Jones. Rodgers under center, second and inches. And the fake handoff. Rodgers rolls right, throws end zone, touchdown. Robert Tonyan. Aaron Rodgers delivers the dagger. And it's 36-27 Green Bay.
That was Aaron Rodgers connecting with Robert Tonyan, leading the Packers to their third win of the season. Only a handful of teams remain undefeated in 2020, including both the Chiefs and the Ravens, who will face off tonight on Monday Night Football. Bill Barnwell joins the show to assess the top of the NFL through week three, and a matchup tonight that should be the best game yet. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Monday, September 28th. This is ESPN Daily. Three, two, one. Bill Barnwell, it is late Sunday night, almost midnight, which means it's time for you to make me smarter about the NFL.
I'm going to try my best, Pablo.
Bill Barnwell is a senior writer for ESPN, the host of The Bill Barnwell Show, and he's procrastinating his deadline to talk to me. So we just watched the Saints and the Packers on Sunday Night Football, and the Saints lost without their star receiver, Michael Thomas. But that did not stop us from getting a whole bunch of touchdowns. Drew Brees and Aaron Rodgers each threw for three apiece. But in the end, the Packers won, the Saints lost, and they've now lost, New Orleans has, back-to-back games for the first time since 2017. Bill, I know you are writing a new piece about Drew Brees coming off of that two-year deal that Drew Brees signed in the offseason and what we've now seen from him through these first 3 weeks. What did you see in Sunday night's game? Is he regressing, improving? What do we have with Brees right now?
Okay. So, Pablo, Drew Brees is definitely improving. This is a better performance from him. I mean, Brees was downright bad on Monday night in week two against the Raiders before we got to garbage time. And Brees didn't throw deep very frequently until this game was out of hand. But I think the concerns that I've read or I've heard about Brees' arm strength or how deep his passes typically go, they don't really get how Brees and this offense actually work. I mean, Brees is sort of like like a singles hitter in baseball, like a Tony Gwynn, to go back in time, or a post player with no range in basketball. He's not going to suddenly start throwing deep like he's Patrick Mahomes at 41 years old. Brees has succeeded over the last 3 years while throwing some of the shortest passes in the league because he's posted the three best single season completion percentages in NFL history. Now, the good news for the Saints and good news for Saints fans is that Brees was much more accurate on Sunday night. He was 29 of 36 for 288 yards. A lot of that was to Alvin Kamara, who did a lot of the work, but still, 29 of 36 is still a lot better than where Brees was. The bad news was just about everything else. The Saints lost starters Jared Cook and Andres Pete to injuries, while a Devontae Adams-less Aaron Rodgers threw for 283 yards and those three touchdowns you mentioned. The Saints focused on adding veterans with big names like Emmanuel Sanders and Malcolm Jenkins this offseason. But Sanders hasn't been able to stand out with Michael Thomas injured, and Jenkins has been picked apart in pass coverage, including a Mercedes Lewis touchdown on Sunday night. The return of a more accurate Brees, that was a bright spot. But if the Saints continue to struggle with injuries and get disappointing play from their stars, New Orleans is going to need this version of Brees to stick around to have a chance to compete in the NFC.
So the Packers emerge 3-0, and that's where I want to focus the rest of our conversation here, on the teams that are now undefeated through 3 weeks of the NFL season. So, Bill, let's push deeper into the NFC here, because the Chicago Bears are somehow 3-0, and they do it by beating the Falcons 30-26. Chicago was trailing by 16. Head coach Matt Nagy decides to pull quarterback Mitch Trubisky in favor of the veteran, Nick Foles, Mr. Big Bleep Nick himself, who goes on to throw three touchdown passes in the fourth quarter. So I have a two-part question for you now. Why are the Falcons physically incapable of holding on to a fourth quarter lead? And secondly, where does this leave the whole quarterback situation in Chicago?
Let me answer, Pablo, the second part of that question first. The Bears are going to flail by the seat of their pants for the rest of the season. I would assume that Nick Foles is going to start until he struggles and the Bears are trailing by 2 touchdowns in the fourth quarter a couple weeks from now, at which point Mitch Trubisky will come in and lead them to victory, and the cycle will start anew. Unfortunately, I don't have one simple takeaway for our poor friends in Atlanta, because this was different from what we saw in week two. As much as the defense was disappointing in this game, the offense really deserves a fair chunk of the blame for what happened. They scored a touchdown on the opening drive of the third quarter and then basically tried to sit on their lead. Matt Ryan and company racked up a total of 3 first downs on their next 6 drives before the Bears took the lead back. And they only scored 1 field goal over that time after a Trubisky interception. Backup running back Brian Hill dropped an easy third down conversion, which would have put the Falcons in field goal range. And then on the next drive, kicker Younghoe Koo missed a 48-yard field goal attempt.
Ugh.
I know.
Yeah.
And, I mean, let's be fair. The Falcons' defense was very bad. I'm not sure the Falcons are going to make any drastic changes on Monday morning, but Arthur Blank can feel great about seeing this happen on his 78th birthday. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, not the only person celebrating a birthday on Sunday.
Happy birthday, Pablo.
Happy birthday, Pablo.
Happy birthday, Pablo.
Yeah, this is a hard way to discover that you share a birthday with the owner of the Atlanta Falcons, Bill, which feels like you just cast a pox upon my house. Let's get to the other end of the cyberbullying spectrum here, because the Falcons are obviously hurting in the most existential ways. The Seahawks, though, this whole thing about how Seahawks Twitter may or may not have just cyberbullied Pete Carroll into getting Russell Wilson to be his optimal self, that experiment is going fantastically, and the quarterback situation there has never been better. Russell Wilson threw for 5 touchdowns to narrowly beat the Cowboys 38-31. And it feels like every week his case for MVP becomes clearer and clearer. So the Seahawks now 3-0. The Let Russ Cook movement, spearheaded by the aforementioned cyberbully, Mina Kimes, also flourishing. And it seems after letting Russ throw the ball 40 times, running it only 26, that it's worth expanding the metaphor a little bit more. If Russell Wilson is the chef, what's he putting into this pot that is tasting so delicious? What are these key ingredients, Bill Bardwell, that he's working with?
Let's start with one of the best 1-2 punches in football at wide receiver, and Tyler Lockett, who had 3 touchdowns on Sunday, and DK Metcalf, who had the game-winning score, also had a play where he had the ball knocked out of his hands in running into the end zone, but we'll leave that aside. The Seahawks won the game. In both cases, the Seahawks targeted players in the draft that the rest of the league didn't really seem to want. In Lockett's case, they traded up to grab him in the 3rd round of the 2015 draft, where he fell because some teams only saw Lockett as a return guy.
Mm.
9 wide receivers were drafted before Lockett. 4 of them aren't on active rosters right now. Just one of them, Devontae Parker, is still with the team who drafted him. So Tyler Lockett, a success for the Seahawks. And then DK Metcalf is almost the polar opposite in some ways of Tyler Lockett. He came out of Ole Miss as a freak athlete with rumors he had a body fat percentage of 1.6%, which is not, to be clear, not humanly possible. He became this sort of like take magnet before the draft because people either saw him as this uncoverable monster athlete or a fraud who only knew how to run 2 pass routes. Every single team in the NFL passed on Lockett and passed on Metcalf at least once. And on top of all that, quietly, we have to give a lot of credit to a rebuilt Seahawks offensive line. Russ was, in years past, running for his life from the moment he got the football in his hands. So many times Russell Wilson was dealing with free rushers and blitzes that the offensive line just could not pick up. But on Sunday, we saw so many plays where he had time to let his receivers work downfield and find open pockets of space after their initial route concepts were covered. The game-winning touchdown to Metcalf was a good example of just that. And while he makes the magic happen, while he's the one cooking, you could say that the offensive line are his sous chefs.
Let's move on to the AFC, Bill, because as running for one's life goes, it does feel like Josh Allen is perpetually doing that. And we saw in this game yet another team blow a 28-3 lead, with the Bills escaping, winning a nail biter over the Los Angeles Rams. So we have talked about the great duality of Josh Allen on this podcast before. And in this game, we got that. We got him looking consistent throughout the first half, a lot of praise soaring in, even from his critics. As the Bills squandered their lead, he ends up turning on that sort of Josh Allen je ne sais quoi in the fourth quarter. And he delivers this game-winning touchdown to tight end Tyler Kroft.
Josh waiting. Now the snap. Josh going to throw it. Looks, fires into the end zone. He's got Tyler Kroft open. Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo! Touchdown, Bills! A four-yard toss. Josh Allen to Tyler Kroft for the touchdown.
Now, this was a huge test, it felt like, for the Bills. And they win 35-32. So I guess I have to ask you, Bill, are you starting to believe? And please forgive me for doing that.
Okay. I forgive you, Pablo. And I'm actually behind the Bills. And it's not just for your opportunities to make Bill-related puns over the rest of the year on daily. The big question for the Bills this year was whether they could win games because of Josh Allen, as opposed to winning games with him hanging on for dear life or staying out of the way or actively in spite of their starting quarterback. And Pablo, let's be honest. Week one against the Jets, I think any person with two first names could have stepped in a quarterback and beaten the Jets with the Buffalo Bills.
Jake Paul. You're saying the Bills could have started YouTuber Jake Paul and would have been just as successful.
I mean, Jake Paul turned himself into a boxer. I don't think it's that crazy to think he's going to turn himself into a quarterback suddenly. But yes, I would say over the last 2 weeks, the win over the Dolphins in week two and the win over the Rams on Sunday, not only do I think that the Bills needed Josh Allen to win that game, but they needed the 2020 version of Josh Allen, the 2018 version or the 2019 version aren't able to win that game the way Allen did on Sunday. Not only did we see Allen make accurate throws, we even saw him, you know, suddenly bust out a sidearm throw in the fourth quarter for a few plays to try and get the ball out quicker. And as long as he keeps this play up, the Bills are going to be one of the toughest teams in football to beat.
So throughout Sunday and throughout the first 3 weeks of this season, really, we've been getting high-scoring games everywhere. We have not seen that classic 6-3 or 7-9 game just yet. So what could be behind all of these high-powered offenses that are seemingly springing up everywhere in 2020?
Okay, so the first thing that comes to mind is how the league has cut down on penalties. Last year, through the first 3 weeks of the season, officials were calling an average of about 18.5 penalties per game. But as of the time we record this, we're only seeing refs call something closer to a little under 14 penalties per game. We've seen a specific reduction in offensive holding, which can be a drive killer. And on top of that, by not calling offensive holding, it allows offenses to cheat and hold, which is a good thing for offenses because then you can run the ball more effectively and you have more time to throw. So that reduction in offensive holding, the reduction in penalties has driven, I think, a significant increase in scoring. And then I think on top of that, the lack of crowd noise has helped. Road teams in typically loud stadiums haven't needed to resort to silent counts before the snap. Aaron Rodgers was able to use a hard count on a crucial play in the red zone to draw the Saints offside, and then use that free play to draw a pass interference penalty to set up the game's sealing touchdown. Quiet stadiums mean better communication on offense, and that typically means more points.
All right, speaking of all those points, I want to finish out my birthday and Arthur Blank's by talking about tonight's Chiefs-Ravens game, where one team is going to walk away 3-0, and I think we have all the makings of a classic.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot. Taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, They're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
So, Bill, I don't want to overstate my excitement for this game tonight, but I think it's safe to say that if I had, like, totalitarian power over the NFL, I'd probably make the Chiefs and Ravens offense just play unto eternity. So we get that exact matchup tonight. The Ravens have outscored their opponents by an average of about 30 points through the first 2 weeks. They've played the Browns and the Texans. The Chiefs arguably represent their first real test in terms of a team that could keep up with them offensively, maybe even outpace them offensively. So just setting all the stakes as such, is this going to be as high scoring a game as I want it to be?
It can be, because Pablo, I feel like these teams were almost accidentally designed to attack each other. I mean, start with the Ravens on offense. If you were going to build a team to beat the Chiefs, you'd want an effective running game that could hold onto the football, keep Patrick Mahomes on the sideline, and go after a Chiefs run defense, which ranked 26th in Football Outsiders DVOA stat both in 2019 and so far in 2020. You want a quarterback who can run and a tight end who can stretch the Chiefs linebackers. And on top of all that, you'd hope for a wide receiver who can hit home runs when he gets the right matchup against rookie Chiefs cornerback Legarius Sneed. Ravens have that. They have Lamar Jackson. They have Mark Andrews. They have Marquise Brown. They have one of the most devastating rushing attacks in modern league history. That's a terrible matchup for the Chiefs defense. And then, on the other hand, the Ravens love to blitz, and they just happened to cut their Hall of Fame free safety, Earl Thomas, to install a guy who had played 40 defensive snaps before the season as their last line of defense in center field. But the Chiefs are a different animal than the Browns and the Texans in terms of attacking downfield and stretching opposing defenses to their limits. And if you're going to blitz, which the Ravens we know are going to do, you're typically playing man coverage behind those blitzes. So if you're going up against a group of speedy receivers and a quarterback who typically can extend plays forever, all it takes is one missed tackle or one player cutting upfield at the wrong time against heavy man coverage for you to take a short pass or a long pass to the house. The only quarterback with a better QBR against man coverage since Patrick Mahomes took over as the Chiefs starter at the beginning of 2018 is Lamar Jackson.
Wait, so let's get into this. And by the way, prayers up for DeShaun Elliott. Prayers up for everybody, I guess, on both of these defenses, given all of that. But let's get into this shootout, because the duel between Mahomes and Jackson, it is the first matchup ever in NFL history between two former MVPs who are both age 25 or younger. And that is incredible to contemplate, although it should be noted that if there's a tiebreaker in any of this, like Mahomes did win a Super Bowl, maybe he should get, you know, the A1 billing on the boxing heavyweight championship of the world poster we're going to print for this thing. But going into tonight's game, who do you give the advantage to, Pat Mahomes or Lamar Jackson?
Oh, I hate this question, because whoever I don't
answer it, Bill.
So
we
well.
Want to take.
Okay. So both of these guys are incredible. We can both agree. But right now, I almost think we're sleeping on Lamar Jackson a little bit. We know how explosive the Chiefs offense can be. And I don't know anything about cars. Maybe this metaphor doesn't make sense, or the simile doesn't make sense. But it kind of feels like they're in second gear right now. You know, they're not completing a ton of deep passes. Patrick Mahomes only has one completion of 20 yards or more through 2 weeks. And I know that's not going to keep up. He's going to make plays. But he's averaging 6.5 yards per attempt. He's been efficient, but that's extremely quiet by his standards. And meanwhile, on the other side of the field, Lamar Jackson has not been as dominant as a runner as he was during that MVP season a year ago, but he's been incredible as a passer through 2 weeks. Lamar Jackson is second in the league in completion percentage, and he's averaging a league best 9.8 yards per attempt. He's throwing the ninth deepest average pass in football and still second behind Russell Wilson in completion percentage. And it's always tough to get attention after you win MVP, the year after you win MVP, because you almost always take a step backwards in one way or another. But Lamar, strangely, impossibly, somehow has actually gotten better than he was during his MVP season in 2019.
What you describe here with these offenses, I mean, with the Chiefs, there are issues, right? Like, they are coming off of an overtime victory over the Chargers, who started Justin Herbert, and they were trailing, the Chiefs were, for the first three quarters, and then they scored, as they are wont to do, a bunch of points, 11 points in the fourth quarter, got to overtime, hit the field goal in overtime after a few tries. So given that backdrop of the most recent history, is the Kansas City defense in trouble here?
Yeah, it's a bad matchup. And I think, like I said, you'd want to build your offense this way to try and attack the Chiefs. But I'd also say the Chiefs aren't really designed to win with their defense. I think we have to change our sort of conventional idea of what a defense is supposed to do. What they want to do is get the ball back to Patrick Mahomes as quickly as possible. If they can get it via a short field, great. If they can get it via, you know, a three and out, great. But typically, they're willing to give up big plays if they have a shot at creating takeaways. And they're aggressive with coverage. They had one of the best interception rates in football in 2019. They invested heavily up front in their edge rushers to try and create big plays via sacks. Most teams are upset if their defense allows a field goal or a touchdown. But if you're the Chiefs, all that means is that you have Patrick Mahomes back on the field, and that's what you want. The Ravens are going to run the ball effectively in this game, and the Chiefs know that. That just there's very slim chances of them really shutting down the Ravens running game. For the Chiefs, it's more about, hey, can we create a takeaway or two? Can we create a short field for our offense? Can we get Patrick Mahomes back on the field as quickly as possible? If they do that, I think they're going to be in good shape.
So I feel like it's safe to assume also that as soon as this game ends, we're all going to want Patrick Mahomes back on the field as soon as possible again, and ideally facing Lamar Jackson again in the AFC Championship game at the end of this extraordinarily strange season. So that's all so far in the future. It's far too early to think about playoff implications. So let me get you out of here on this. Is there one particular more under-the-radar matchup that you're looking forward to seeing tonight?
Pablo, you know all I'm thinking about. I'm just diving underneath the radar looking for matchups like this. You know that. This is my question. So one of the reasons the Chiefs have not been quite as impressive as maybe we would have expected through 2 weeks on offense is the play of their offensive line. ESPN has a fancy stat called pass block win rate that uses machine learning and the chips in each player's shoulder pads to get a sense of how effective each team is at blocking for their quarterback. And so far this year, the Chiefs rank 27th in pass block win rate along their offensive line, down from 14th a year ago. And we kind of expected them to maybe take a step backwards. They lost some players on their offensive line on the interior. Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, the famous doctor / offensive lineman, opted out for COVID. But the really surprising thing is you look at the right tackle spot. That's where Mitchell Schwartz plays. Mitchell Schwartz, by most people's estimations last year, was the best right tackle in all of football. When you look at the individual pass block win rate stats for each player along the offensive line, ESPN has ranked 165 linemen through 2 weeks. Mitchell Schwartz ranks 165th. That is last out of all offensive linemen in the NFL. I think Schwartz has played a little better than those numbers would indicate. He's also played some pretty stiff competition, but he's not been his usual self through 2 weeks. And if the Ravens can attack Schwartz at tackle, that will allow them to keep Patrick Mahomes in the pocket. That limits his ability to make those magical plays after 7-8 seconds of running around scrambling frantically. And it could help them win the football games.
That's wild. I mean, I would not last. Dead last is what you're saying about Mitchell Schwartz. And I know that should be the headline from that deep submarine dive into analytic information that you just gave me. But unfortunately, I think my mom is going to listen to this podcast. And what she's going to clue in on is not Mitchell Schwartz. It is the fact that, yes, there is an offensive lineman named Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, who is also a doctor. So just apologies to my mom, who I've always told her, look, I'm in sports. I can't do the med school thing. I will be hearing about Dr. Laurent Duvernay-Tardif. Thank you, Bill Barnwell.
Thanks, Papa. You know, to me, you're Dr. Pablo, just about sports.
Up next, LeBron James is the single most powerful man in the NBA. So let's talk a little more about just how extraordinary that statement is.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home some huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Here's another story I want you to know. LeBron James had 38 points, 16 rebounds, and 10 assists to eliminate Denver this weekend. A 40-minute tour de force that would be the defining stat line of pretty much anyone's career. But it was another line LeBron delivered after the game that even better encapsulated what makes him so unique. LeBron was asked what was going through his mind as he sat on the floor, shoes off, at age 35, as the confetti rained down upon him. And after praising the Nuggets, he started talking about his teammates, and specifically Anthony Davis, who had also dominated, scoring 27.
This is the reason why I wanted to be a teammate of his and why I brought him here. I wanted him to see things that he hadn't saw before in this league.
But hold on. I want you to listen to the end of that first sentence just one more time.
This is the reason why I wanted to be a teammate of his and why I brought him here.
This is the reason why I brought him here. You may have missed that particular combination of subject and verb the first time around, but the city of New Orleans, rest assured, noticed it fairly immediately. They noticed it because 2 years ago, Anthony Davis was their LeBron. But then he signed with Rich Paul, LeBron's very close friend and agent, and then he demanded to be traded, ideally to LeBron's Lakers, which Davis eventually was. But LeBron never actually admitted his degree of influence throughout that whole power play. Not in public, not until that Freudian slip of a post-game interview this weekend. Because a player is not supposed to orchestrate league-altering transactions like that, not even if they're the greatest player ever. Yes, it's against the tampering rules of the NBA, but more than that, such a power play challenges the familiar structure of sports itself. Players play, coaches coach, and upstairs, the team executives, the general manager, the team president, they run the show. That standard gap in power is why no less than Michael Jordan came to hold such a famous grudge against his general manager with the Bulls, Jerry Krause. Jordan had to retire and buy his own NBA team in Charlotte to exert that degree of influence. LeBron has been wielding it for years. So as we marvel at his 10th NBA Finals now, with his third handpicked franchise and his own handpicked teammates, it is worth remembering what really makes LeBron's 17-year career as a player so unique. Because there is greatness, and there is power, but they are two different concepts, unless you're him. I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.